Are you happy? And when I say that, I don't mean, you know, just right at this moment, are you, you know, overjoyed and about to giggle because you think something, you're just so bubbly happy. But are you happy with your life? Are you happy with the things that are happening in your life? Not the things that are happening to you necessarily, but are you happy with the way you are choosing to live your life? The reason I ask that question, and I want us to really think about that. Sometimes some people put too much emphasis on happiness, and they say, oh, God just wants me to be happy. That's all He wants from me. We know that's not true. Ecclesiastes tells us that what God really wants from us, the whole conclusion of the matter, is to fear God and keep His commandments. And it's interesting, though, that Jesus says in John chapter 13 that that is what will make us happy. It's amazing the things that people go after all throughout the world seeking happiness. If I could just have a better job, I'd be happy. If I could just have a better car, I'd be happy. If I just had a better house, I'd be happy. If my wife was nicer to me, I'd be happy. If my kids were better, I'd be happy. If the kids were out of diapers, I'd be happy. If the kids were grown, then I'd be happy. If I could retire, then I'd be happy. And it's always if something happened, then I could be happy. Jesus, though, tells us happiness isn't based on what happens to you. Turn with me to John chapter 13. We want to do a couple of things. We're going to have basically two ideas here because of John 13, what it hits on. The first one is really verse 17. And we kind of touched on this, brushed over this section last week when we were talking about Jesus washing the disciples' feet. But I want us to notice verse 17 in particular. Verse 16, he says, "The servant is not greater than his Lord, neither is he that is sent greater than he that sent him." And he said, you know, I've given you this example. I washed your feet. You need to do these things for one another. In other words, serve one another. This is what Jesus said. But verse 17 is the real kicker. It's the thing that just slams us as Americans and our desire to, I'm going to find happiness in, you know, money or fame or fortune of some kind, or I'm going to find it in prestige, or I'm going to find it in possessions, or these kind of things. After Jesus has talked to them and He's shown the example by washing their feet, and then He says in verse 17, look at that, if you know these things, and this is the King James, because it's kind of odd. It's almost like the newer translations and the King James kind of swap here. But he says, if you know these things, happy are you if you do them. Jesus says, if you really want to be happy in life, you know what will really make you happy? Do what I'm telling you to do. Obey me. Listen to what I'm teaching you. That's what Jesus says. And so many times, well, surely there's got to be something else. But I want you to think back over the history of your life. When were you truly the most content, the happiest in your life? Oh, I know if you had some big thing, like, you know, you won $1 million, well, publisher's clearing, they come in with that big check, you know. Wow. Yeah, you'd be happy for a minute. But over the course of your life, when have you really been the happiest? And when have you been the most miserable? I believe that for most of us, one of two things is going to be the case. We were happiest or most miserable when we were around other Christians. I said, wait a minute, you happiest or most miserable? Wait a minute, which is it? Well, that depends. For someone who loves the Lord and has truly devoted their lives to the Lord, there's no better place to be than around other people who love the Lord and have devoted their lives to the Lord. And serving God and doing good are some enjoyable experiences. Doing what God wants you to do brings you joy. However, on the other side of that coin, if we're faking, if we're hypocrites, and we're putting on a show pretending for those around us that we're serving God when we really, our heart's not in it, then we're going to be absolutely miserable every time we're around those folks. Because we're going to be scared to death that somebody's going to figure out that we're not for real. We're going to be worried that somebody's going to find out about the sin that we're trying to keep covered up. If we're living in sin, and that's what gets us into trouble. When we're trying to be of the world and of the church at the same time, that's misery. Now, I'm going to tell you, there are some people who live a life of wanton pleasure and fully have abandoned all sense of morality, who are happy with that for the time being. It's a pleasurable existence to them. Now, in the long run, that's not going to be a pleasurable existence. And that's one of the things we learn about Moses. You remember Hebrews tells us about Moses. It says, but he chose rather to suffer the affliction with God's people than to enjoy, he could have enjoyed it, to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. You think it could be enjoyable to be the heir to the throne of the greatest kingdom in the world? You think that could be enjoyable? Do you think there could be some pleasure in that? To enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. See, the Bible never lies to us. The Bible is honest when it says, yes, sin is pleasurable for a season. Sin can be fun for a little while. People can be happy, wrapped up, covered up, swimming in sin for a while. But it doesn't last. Just like Moses knew, the pleasures of sin are but for a season. Jesus knew the same thing. You want to really be happy? Sin's not the way to go. Oh, you might get some pleasure, you might enjoy something for a little while, you might have some fun for a while, but it will catch up with you, and the end will make it so that all of the pleasure is forgotten in the midst of the pain and the suffering. And if that doesn't happen in this life, it certainly will happen after Judgment Day. But again, some people are going to be miserable when they're supposedly serving God, if they're just doing it for a show or if their heart's not in it, if it's not real to them. That's not a happy way to live either. Trying to pretend you're something that you're not will not make you happy. And so Jesus tells us, if you know these things I've taught, and we're almost to the end. You know, this is the night that he's going to be betrayed and be crucified the next day. This is it. This is the end of his life. And he's telling them, he's been teaching them all this time through John. And he's now telling them, if you want to be happy, you know these things I've been teaching you? Do them. Don't just do a few of them. Don't just do them a little bit or part of the time, or kind of do them, because doing it part way, kind of, half of them, a few of them here and there, that's not going to bring you happiness. That's going to bring you misery. Your worldly friends are going to despise you because you're not with them all the time. You're not willing to go where they go and do what they do. But you're not really going to be able to latch on to relationships among the saints because, well, you still want to be out there in the world half the time. So we've got to make up our mind. And that's what Jesus is telling his disciples. Make up your mind. You know these things I've taught you? If you will do them, they will make you happy. But what's the story we get all the time from the world? Well, Christianity. It's just all about what you can't do. And you'll be miserable all the time because, you know, you got to be watching out for every little thing here and there. Christians are always grumpy. You know, the reason they say that is because, you know, some of the Christians they've met are like that. But as Christians, if we're, and again, we're not going to be perfect at it. We're always going to stumble here and there. And those times when we stumble, we're going to feel guilty. We're not going to be happy at those times, are we? But we can repent. We can come back to God. He can forgive us of that. And we can have that joy of fellowship with Him again. And we can restore that happiness. And it's an amazing thing. Jesus knew it. He created us. You'd think He would know what would make us happy. And that's what He said would do it. Remember we talked about, especially when we were back at the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount, and how you've heard it said this, but I'm going to tell you this, and the things Jesus was saying that were just backwards from what society says. Well, see, this is another one. Society says if you do what Jesus wants, you're going to be miserable, you're going to be grumpy all the time, you're going to never get to have any fun. But that's not true. That's a lie of the devil. The fact of the matter is, Christians can have more and better fun than the people of the world because they can have fun and then not have any regrets. They can enjoy some of the pleasurable experiences in life that are not sinful and not have to worry about getting caught or getting in trouble with somebody else or getting arrested or... Well, you know, who knows, at some point we may have to worry about getting arrested. First century Christians did. But not because we're doing wrong. So I want us to keep that one in mind. This is what will make you happy if you will do what Jesus teaches you to do. Not just a little bit, not just sometimes. But go for it. Go all out. You know, there are a lot of things in this world that if you just try it part way, it's going to be a disaster. Y'all remember Evel Knievel? When he was going to make one of those jumps on his motorcycle, and he was going to jump over, you think he ever thought, you know, I'm just going to go halfway? No, that would have been disastrous. And a few times he and others had some disasters because they didn't go all the way. There are a lot of things in this world that are that way. You can't stand with one foot on the boat and one foot on the dock and expect to have a very good ride. That's not going to work out well. What you're going to wind up is wet. And if you can't swim, you'll drown. You've got to either make up your mind, either stay on the dock or get in the boat. But make up your mind which one you want to do and go for it. So after Jesus had said all this, he tells them that someone's going to betray him, and he prophesied that. And they ask, you know, who's it going to be? And he tells them, Peter asks John, hey, ask him who it's going to be. And so John leans back and says, well, Lord, which one's it going to be? And Jesus tells him, he says, it's who I'm going to hand this sop to. After I dip this bread in the sauce, I'll ever have that dipping sauce. For, anyway, that's. But he said, I'm going to dip it in there, and then I'm going to hand it to them, and that's going to be it. And so, John telling us about these events that took place at that Last Supper. No one at the table knew what was going on when Jesus looked at Judas and said, "What thou doest, do quickly." Which reminds me of how important it is for us to interpret the Bible properly. Perhaps you've heard the story about the fellow that thought he could just flip open to the Bible and point at a verse, and that would be the verse that would tell him what he needed to do in his life. And so one day he opened up the Bible and he pointed to a verse that said, Judas went out and hanged himself. And he said, well, okay, that's interesting, but I don't know what that's got to do with me. So he flips again and pointed at the verse, and it says, go thou and do likewise. He said, well, there's got to be some mistake here. And he's flipping back and forth again, and he opened up to another, pointed at a verse, and it was this one. And he said, what thou doest, do quickly. Well, see, it's important that we take the verses in their context and not just pull a phrase here and there. That'll get us into all sorts of trouble if it doesn't wind up with us dead. But he tells Judas, "You go. What you're going to do, go do it quickly." And the disciples that were there, they didn't know. They didn't understand what Jesus was saying to Judas. They didn't know Judas was going to be the one that was going to betray Jesus. They thought, well, maybe he's going to go buy something for the feast. Maybe that's it. We've got this big feast coming up, and we'll have, you know, this whole feast of unleavened bread lasted for 8 days, you know, all that. So maybe he's going to go buy something that we're going to need for the feast. And then Jesus explains to them that he's only going to be with them for a little while, verse 33. Just a little while and I'm with you. And then he starts to tell them some of the same things that he had told the Jews. You'll seek me, and like I told the Jews before, where I'm going, you can't come right now. But he did say, you'll get to come with me later. You can follow me later. He tells Peter that in verse 36. In verse 34 and 35, he gives one of the most challenging commandments for all of us. How is the world going to know we're Christ's disciples? How are other religious people going to know if we are Christians, if we are followers of Christ? Is it because we have Church of Christ on our sign? It's not what Jesus said. Is it because we take the Lord's Supper every first day of the week? That's not what Jesus said. I know it's because we sing and we don't have a piano. That's not what Jesus said. That doesn't mean those things aren't important. But Jesus said the real telltale sign that's going to let everybody know who you really are. He gave them this command, a new commandment I give you, that you love one another. Is that a new commandment? No, that's not a new commandment. But listen to the rest of it. Now, the Jews, they were supposed to love one another too. Love your neighbor as yourself, and all those kinds of things. But he goes on, he says, love one another. As I have loved you, so love ye one another. That's a powerful step beyond just loving one another. There are a lot of us who really don't have a trouble with loving our neighbor, loving one another, our fellow Christians, as far as humans go. But to love as Christ loved, to love to the point that we'd be willing to lay down our lives for somebody else, that goes a long way. But that's what he says. He says, by this shall all men know that you are my disciples, if you have love one to another. Sadly, in many places in the world today, many Christians show more love to people outside the church than they show to one another. And that's not going to draw people. That's not going to attract people. That's not going to help people see, hey, they're followers of Jesus Christ. They really love each other. Now, that's not to say that we should hate everybody else out there and only love each other. We're even to love our enemies, Jesus says. But the real signature difference in Christians and everybody else out there is supposed to be our love for each other. Is that the first thing people notice about us? If not, why not? What are we missing? That's an important thing. If we're missing that, then we're not being what Jesus said was the number one thing that was going to let other people know that we're His disciples. And then He closes out this chapter as we finish. With Peter asking, wait a minute, where are you going, Lord, that we can't go with you? Notice, Peter didn't ask about the love one another as I've loved you. He didn't ask about that. Peter didn't even ask about, wait a minute, well, who'd you say was going to betray you? The question Peter asks is, well, wait, where are you going that we can't go? And Jesus said, you can't follow me now, but you will follow me later, afterwards. Peter said, Lord, why can't I follow you now? I'll lay down my life for you. That sounds like the kind of love God's called on us to have, doesn't it? Sounds like what Jesus just said. Love one another as I loved you. I love you so much, Jesus, I'd lay down my life for you. 1 Corinthians 10:12 says, let him who thinks he stand take heed lest he fall. Peter was so sure of himself. He was so confident in what he would do. And in some ways, he was that person. In the garden later, he's going to be ready to pull out the sword and fight and die. See, Jesus didn't call on him to fight and die in a war, in a battle with a sword. Jesus told him to put the sword away. Jesus did call on him to die, but not fighting back. You know, it's a tough thing to go to war. I've never gone, but I've talked to people who have, and it changes your life. It's a tough thing to fight against another person on equal terms. They got a weapon, you got a weapon, and you're trying to, you know, shoot each other. But how much harder would it be to go out there and stand before those folks when they've got a weapon and you don't? You see, Peter didn't say, I'll fight to the death for you. What Peter said was, I'll lay down my life for you. Laying down your life's not the same as fighting to the death. But Jesus answered, will you lay down your life for me? Truly I tell you, the cock shall not crow until you've denied me three times. You see, when Peter was ready to fight, and sometimes we feel like, yeah, we're ready to fight, but when Jesus said, put your sword up, then Peter was ready to get out of there. He didn't want to be there without his sword, without his weapon, without his defense. And we are to fight a spiritual warfare. There's no doubt about that. But Jesus doesn't call on His church to fight a physical warfare. Never has. Never will. There are countries, governments. We talked about government this morning. There are governments that, you know, fight wars all the time, all over the globe. But Jesus said, my kingdom is not of this world. His kingdom's different. We don't go out like the Muslim religion and conquer countries with the sword and say, either you convert or you die. That's not the way Christianity works. And Peter wasn't really ready for that step. He still had a ways to grow. But isn't that comforting to us? It should be. To know, you know, Peter, of all the disciples, Peter's the one I can most relate to. I don't know about you, but if I had to say I was going to be one of the disciples, it'd be Peter, because I'd always be sticking my foot in my mouth, saying the wrong thing, doing the wrong thing, you know, thinking that I was going to be better than I really turned out to be, thinking I loved God more than I really did, and always being a disappointment to Jesus. But you know what's amazing? Despite all of those failures that Peter had, Jesus still loved him. He still accepted him as his disciple. He didn't say, Peter, you're going to deny me, and you know what? You're not my apostle anymore. In fact, Peter, afterwards, and when we'll see this later, Peter was, you know, he was defeated. He felt like that's the end. I'm not even a Christian anymore. I'm not a disciple. I'm not a follower of Christ anymore. And yet he still longed to be with Christ. And when he saw Christ, he was the first one to want to get to Christ. And Christ had to take him aside and say, hey, you know what? I still love you. You're still part of my group. He didn't say it in those many words. And then, of course, in spite of all that, in spite of all his mistakes and all his blunders, and especially the times he said the dumbest things, I know none of us have ever done that, but Peter did, said some of the dumbest things. And then, lo and behold, the day of Pentecost comes, and who got to preach the first sermon? Oh, Peter, the one that was always sticking his foot in his mouth. It's a good thing he was inspired, or there's no telling what he would have said that day. No telling how he would have fouled that up. But that should give us hope that we don't have to be perfect. We just have to keep on keeping on. We're going to fall. We're going to stumble. We have to get back up and keep going. And that's one thing about Peter. No matter how bad it was, no matter how bad he'd messed up, he got back up and he tried again. We need to have that kind of determination. We're going to mess up. We're going to stumble. We're going to fall. We're going to skin our knee or blacken our eye, you know, bruise our nose, make a fool of ourselves for everybody to go laugh at us. We'll get back up and we say, I'm going to do better today than I did yesterday. That's part of that love for Christ that we are to have. That's part of the doing what He's taught us. Not that we're always perfect, but then when we're not perfect, we come back to Him and repent and let Him continue to work on us. If you're here tonight, if perhaps you've not been allowing God to work on you, maybe you've been fighting against Him, maybe you've fallen down and you hadn't gotten back up, it's time to get back up. Get back in the race. Get back on the right page. If you are a Christian, maybe you're kind of feeling like, oh, I'll lay down. Look at me. Maybe you need to humble yourself. Maybe you need to ask forgiveness for arrogance or pride in your life. Maybe you haven't loved the saints like you should. Maybe you have some other need that you need to express to the congregation tonight. Whatever need you may have, if you have one tonight, please come as we stand and sing.